When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Bald Move Pulp podcast. Today, we're talking about the 1997 sci-fi horror parody satire, Starship Troopers, directed by one Paul Verhoeven, the Dutch Treat, who also directed RoboCop, Total Recall, Hollow Man, Basic Instinct. It was written with a longtime partner, Ed Neumeier. He also wrote RoboCop with Paul Verhoeven. It's based on a novel of the same name by Robert A. Heinlein. Asterix, kind of, sort of. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. It stars Casper Van Diem, who did Sleepy Hollow, and that's about it. Dina Meyer, tragic. She was in Johnny Mnemonic, Dragonheart, and Star Trek Nemesis, disappeared off the face of the planet. Denise Richards, if you're a horny teenager in the 90s, you probably knew her from Wild Things, The World Is Not Enough, Undercover Brother. We actually saw her in Love Actually. She was one of the American hot gals. The Irish dude. Was Irish or Scottish was visiting. Jake Busey. We just saw him in Enemy of the State not too long ago. He's also in Frighteners, Contact, and PCU. Neil Patrick Harris, Doogie Howser himself. Also in How I Met Your Mother, Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blog. A lot of the Kumail... And what was the thing? Something and something went to White Castles. Harold and Kumar.
Harold and Kumar. Yeah.
Kumail Kumar. Clancy Brown, the man himself, Highlander, Shawshank Redemption. Just saw him in John Wick 4. He was an adjudicator or some shit like that. Seth Gillum. Love him on The Wire and Oz. But honestly, I know him most at this point from The Walking Dead. Father Gabriel, and Michael Ironside from Scanners, Top Gun, Total Recall. There's a lot of other fun cameos in the background. You might see Golden Girl Rue McClanahan as a biology teacher in high school. And then DEA special agent in charge, Hank Schrader himself, Dean Norris, shows up as a commanding officer in boot camp. Jim, my opinion, podcasters do all the lying. Mobile infantry does all the dying. If you think I'm going to sit here and listen to two mamby-pamby, panty-wasted, pinko, commie, bug-loving liberals besmirch the fighting men and women of Hollywood's motion picture fighting infantry unit 6, led by the courageous Paul Verhoeven, you're out of your fucking mind. What'd you think of this movie?
Good, because I'm not here to besmirch it. I think this movie's great. I love this movie. Have since I first saw it in 97. Still love it to this day. A+, nothing wrong with it.
How did you see this movie in 97?
Well, it might have been 98, because I watched it on DVD.
So, all right.
And back then, DVDs came out like 9 months later, a year later.
Yeah, they made you wait.
Yeah. But I worked at Walmart, and I remember seeing this on the shelves and going, yes, I need to watch this movie. So I bought it and took it home and watched it right under my parents' noses. They had no idea. Mm. Had a TV in my room. Pop that bad boy in, and I loved
every
second
of it. That was your first mistake. You let a teen have a...
Yep.
Have a TV in their bedroom? What?
Yeah.
Well, no wonder. No wonder you've turned out the way you did.
The ripe old age of 16, and I'm watching Starship Troopers. And I think I'm understanding Starship Troopers is the thing. Like, I was surprised at how accurate my memory of this movie was. Hmm. That's my takeaway from this one.
This is the part where I confess I never really loved Starship Troopers.
Oh, no.
You'll recall that I was quite the conservative teenager. Loved Robert A. Heinlein. I love Starship Troopers. I read it right before the movie came out just to kind of refresh my memory because I was so excited. And I thought this, I didn't like the movie. I thought the movie was a mockery, made the novel a mockery. I thought the movie was stupid and had dumb military tactics and was espousing lessons that I didn't really believe in. And now, of course, my politics have changed quite a bit, but like, I don't feel like this movie does enough to satire. I don't think it goes far enough, or it's missing something. It just feels false from every angle. It feels like a hollow, half-hearted attempt to criticize the creeping fascism and Western civilization, quote unquote. And it also is just a shitty adaptation of Robert Heinlein's novel. Like,
yeah, it's definitely got differences for sure.
From what I read is that Ed Neumeier kind of like percolated this, and he'd read Heinlein as a kid and is kind of percolating his mind, and he was trying to think of like what to do. He broke up with this longtime writing partner that he had success with RoboCop over, and he's like, what a clean slate, what I want to do. I want to tell like a coming of age teenage rom-com romp, but also has like boot camp scenes, and they're fighting some kind of just faceless bug. You can mow down millions of them, no one cares. My wife's afraid of bugs, I'll make bugs. And then through the Hollywood pitch process, a Hollywood producer's like, you know, this reminds me a lot of Starship Troopers. If it had the IP attached, you might have a better chance at it. Mm-hmm. And they kind of like hammered in some, but like if this was just called like Outpost 7 or whatever it was supposed to be, and it was like a weird red, you know, wet hot American summer with bugs, I might not care. But like, I don't know. This movie, I don't feel like does anything that it sets out to do other than titillate and like exploit like violence and nudity. Like that's the thing it does well, but like, yeah. So I missed the social satire that I easily pick up and Total Recall, RoboCop, some of Verhoeven's
really?
Other
How
works.
Can you miss it? I mean, it's so front and center. I mean, those propaganda commercials that are peppered throughout this thing tell the whole story.
It's just they made a Nazi utopia. And you're supposed to be like, well, sure, it's a utopia and everything's perfect and everyone's perfect, but some people have to die and sacrifice to maintain that. And we can go into it. We can go in depth into it. But like, I think the crucial mistake is the bugs are just faceless, nameless. There's no like attempts to humanize them or empathize with them. Why wouldn't we exterminate them? They're hurling asteroids at us across from space, and they're bugs.
Okay, never read of this, but we have to get way into it to actually.
Yeah, no, we're probably going to have to.
Yeah, we're probably stepping too far into the movie.
If I want to recommend why anyone would go back and watch this 25-plus-year-old movie, I think the special effects are really awesome and they hold up.
They're decent for the time. Yeah.
The bug, like CGI special effects. Curiously, some of the practical effects I don't hold up. And I like the spaceship design, but like the fighters and the ground transport just look like Pontiac Voyagers with stub wings on them. I don't know. They're just like minivans in space. It kind of kills
me. I'm not
a
huge fan of the spaceships in this. I think they're like mediocre designs. They're not, you know, Star Wars. They're not Star Trek, right? They're not top of the line, but they're decent.
And if you're a fan of the show Firefly, the mobile infantry died to give the Confederacy. Who is the bad guys in that? The Purple Bellies.
Probably
mobile infantry died to give Firefly their cool sci-fi armor for their bad guys, their stormtrooper armor. They just spray painted it purple, called them Purple Bellies, and there you go. It's immediately recognizable too.
Yeah, no, you're literally like, you're not making a joke here. This is literally, they took the equipment that they used, and
And I think I felt like I read a blog somewhere where this like mobile infantry armor appeared in like many different TV shows, low budget direct, like this stuff got passed around like a carton of smokes.
I mean, when you spend $90 million making a thing, you want to get your money's
and
worth,
lose
right?
your shirt on it. This was not a successful movie upon first release, so you're probably trying to make it anywhere. I thought the special effects still hold up mostly. Mm-hmm. I think that what was the other thing that I think the music is good. This is the same composer. Mm-hmm. I forget his name, but he did like Conan the Barbarian, RoboCop. And you can kind of hear a little bit of RoboCop trying to get started in some of the MI Victory music whenever they're having a victorious moment. I think that's really good. And there's some good looking young people that
have non-sexualized,
but yet good nudity. You know, the whole point is this is 700 years in the future. Your race, your class, your sex doesn't matter to anything. You're just meat in the grinder.
Except when you're actually having sex and you're nude, because that happens too. But yeah, during the boot camp stuff, no, it's non-sexualized.
I've never seen a dude jersey a girl as a prelude to sex. It's the opening move. That's his opening fight move. It's his opening sex move. You know?
Hey, man, it's memorable. I mean, what can you say about it other than you remember that scene because it's so weird?
It's true. But it's true. Our producer, Talitha, is saying that the composer is Basil Poledouris. I hope I'm pronouncing that guy's name, but he's got quite a few credits, I noticed, on IMDb. And it's also got a lot of fun cameos. Like I said, it's really funny to see, you know, Seth Gillum show up, to see Dean Norris show up out of nowhere. There's a few like that that's really
I have
fun,
questions but... about the acting for you. Who do you think is the best actor in this movie? Do you have an opinion on that?
It's a toss-up between Michael Ironside and Clancy Brown.
Yep. That's exactly what I was going to say. Who do you think is the worst actor in this movie?
That's the top line.
That's the top line. It's pretty good. Michael Ironside's not bad. He does what he needs to do in this movie very effectively.
Yeah, but none of these guys are Daniel Day-Lewis, right?
No.
These are the tough old white guys you cast when you want to cast a tough old white guy role. And that's all you need them to do.
Yeah.
But then you go, honestly, I think Dina Myers is probably the best from there.
From that crew? Yeah. From that class.
Yeah.
I'm with you. She's actually way better than the rest of the crew. It's a shame she didn't do more because I really like her.
Thank you. I love Dina Meyer. I don't know if it's because to me, when I was a young man, I could not understand what this dumb fuck was seeing in Carmen.
What?
Okay,
He's literally seeing Denise Richards on screen. That's what he's seeing.
You take Denise Richards over Dina Meyer.
No, but
okay,
visually,
thank you.
Physically, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know, man. The red hair.
Top tier. I don't know.
The skin, the eyes.
Sure. I mean, I guess if you got a type, you got a type.
Personality.
Yeah.
What's
the
opposite of...
for me is like... Here's the thing. I think that Denise Richards is the worst actor in this movie, unfortunately.
By a pretty wide margin. She's pretty, she seems challenged.
She is, and it doesn't help that some of these costumes are making her look like a child when she's supposed to be in charge and growing into her role, and the costuming is doing her no favors.
It's like a 15-year-old girl broke into her Nazi father's
memorabilia
closet uh-huh. and started playing dress up, you know, like everything's
totally.
Not quite. Yeah. But
and,
I always
yeah,
thought
she just doesn't
Dina
have
Myers.
The gravitas there, but.
Every time I saw, I know we talked about this in Dragonheart. I think she's good in mm-hmm. Johnny Mnemonic. Like of all of the three young, attractive people from Melrose Place and 90210 that they cast this movie from, there was a hilarious aside that I saw Paul Verhoeven make in an interview where it's like, yeah, we cast all these kind of lightly known TV people who are just young and fresh faced and beautiful. Like I was thinking Nazi poster recruiting. I was thinking... You know, the Triumph of the Will. It's like, I want that clean cut, square jaw, blonde hair, blue eyes look. And he's like, in retrospect, maybe the movie would have done better if we had cast for talent rather than looks. But, you know, what are we?
I saw that quote too. Yeah.
It's such a.
That should be the
savage.
Golden rule for casting. But okay. Yeah.
Such a savage quote from the Flying Dutchman here. But
Casper
yeah.
Casper Van Dien. Is an interesting character in this movie. He's asked to do a lot, right? His character changes so much over this movie. He goes from unsure of himself, schoolboy, just trying to figure out who he is and what he wants to do in life, to self-assured guy who's been through hell and come back from it. And he almost pulls it off. He's not quite up to the task. Like every time, especially when you put him up against Michael Ironside and you're giving him literally the quotes that Michael Ironside had, and the Clancy Brown had, and trying to get him to say them with the same gravitas doesn't quite work. But I mean, he's super young and he almost gets there.
I think he does a really good job when he's fully in his Rico's Roughnecks phase. When he's like, I think he does a very good job of playing like a self-assured commanding officer who's just yelling and screaming. But anytime
on the
he's
battlefield,
at,
yes. But I think when he's trying to like inspire his troops, it's not like outside of the battlefield, it's not quite as good. He doesn't quite bring it.
Yeah, and then when you ask me to think that he's grieving over his entire home city just being destroyed, or even his girlfriend, wannabe girlfriend, breaking up with him, like none of that stuff really. Does he like women? I don't even know. Like, it's.
I mean, he joins the military for a woman, so I assume so.
The script is telling me this, but just looking at how he interacts with Dina Myers and Denise Richards, like,
two phenomenally gorgeous women, yeah.
He has zero chemistry with either of them.
Yeah, does it hurt that, like...
Honestly, experience, that's the thing. It's like, I never was rooting for him, because number one, I thought Carmen was the clear trash option compared to Dizzy. Secondly, her chemistry that she had with like a person experiencing homelessness version of Rob Lowe is 10 times that of Casper Van Dien. Like, she, it just like, I mean, don't get me wrong, it doesn't exactly scorch the screen.
No.
But
imagine if
smolder.
That was actually Rob Lowe.
Yeah, it leaves a burn mark, I think, you know. It discolors the film from its tepid heat.
I feel you.
I like him in Sleepy Hollow. When Ray Parks tears him in half with those axes, boy, I really...
Wow.
Have you not seen Sleepy Hollow?
I saw part of it a lot, like 20 plus years ago.
That would probably be a good Double Dern subject.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
But yeah, I mean, is there, like, what else do we want to talk about just in terms of, in generalities before we get... down to spoiler oilers here?
Not much. Let's talk about the plot. What's the plot? We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
They're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
If you haven't seen this movie, this is essentially a coming-of-age film about four high school friends that, in the far-flung future, where service guarantees citizenship, they've decided they want to join the military to fully participate in society. They are sorted into, by their talents and abilities, into different houses. Like Harry Potter, there's House Fleet that does all the flying. There's House Mobile Infantry, which is sort of like Gryffindor. They do all the dying. And then there's Military Intelligence, or Game. What do they call it? Games and...
Theory?
Games and Theory, which is obviously Slytherin. That's where Doogie Howser goes. And just like in the movies, there are no Hufflepuffs. No Hufflepuff representation at all. They actually doubled up on the Gryffindors. And it's about them you know, breaking up and becoming men and women of themselves, and they're fighting this planet of bugs, which is somehow from across the galaxy hurling asteroids at Earth with precision, and we gotta invade them to stop all that shit. I think about Paul Verhoeven's was not fresh off Showgirls and had a little bit more time, maybe he would have come up to like the bugs or got oil in them or something that would have made the parody a little bit tighter. And we got to go kill all the bugs. And that's the story. It's about our man Rico, Johnny Rico, going through basic training, seeing friends die, working his way up through the enlisted ranks, becoming a battlefield commissioner officer, and leading his team to victory over victory over the bugs eventually. That's a spoiler, but what did you think? The Earth was going to lose? Come on.
Yeah.
Let's talk super spoilers. What did you want? You said you wanted to pick my brain about something. I forget. Maybe we can start there.
I don't know. The thing that we were threatening to dive in deeply to is the satirical nature of this film. And I think it's both front and center, and the thing that makes this film watchable in any capacity.
So how does this make fascism feel unappealing? Because that's the point of any satire, is to, like, you know, the emperor has no clothes.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, to me, you look at the people who have... You look at the scars of the people who've been through the fascist machine here, and it seems pretty obvious. These people's lives are not better for this. They come out with no limbs and scarred faces and shit like that. And what are we doing it for? Like, that's the big, the satirical point is, like, what is this for? Why are we doing this? And they make the point. It's kind of subtle. There are maybe a couple of lines in there that make the point about, like, why we're actually doing this. And it's a response to something that the bugs have done, but we encroached on their territory because of our expansionist attitude. And if you look at, like, the speech that straight up fascist general or whatever, the sky marshal or sky captain of the world of tomorrow or whatever gives, he's like, we're going to go out there and we're going to kill these bugs and we're going to show them that the human race will dominate the galaxy forever. It's like, it's just this idea that we are somehow entitled to everything in the universe. And so we're out there expanding and expanding and expanding and pushing into other people's territory. And of course they have the response to fight back. And then we view that as an attack.
I think that's two lines in the whole fucking movie, and everything else in the movie is screaming how badass this is and how awesome
because
I want to talk about, like, because that's actually something that bothered me when I was a kid watching this, is like, it felt like this movie was like shitting on disabled veterans, or like, look how, but like, you know, lots of guys in World War II got their legs blown off and walking around, with hook arms and wheelchairs and whatnot. But like, that didn't mean that liberating Europe from Nazi Germany was
for a good reason. Why are we doing it? We're doing it because we want to expand our territory.
Because there was like one line from a newscast that said maybe sort of that this I don't know. Like, to me,
and
like,
that
I kept
speech and all the commercials, the ads for like, join up, become a citizen, do your duty, all this stuff, these are on the face of them satire. I mean, look at, there's a commercial in there where children are stomping on cockroaches and their mother is standing by hysterically cheering them on. I mean, this is just blatant satire. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I get the wartime propaganda is cringe, but again, that's like, and maybe that's his point. It's like, I feel like that's just what people do in war, you know? It's like, they're trying to like make, I don't know, it's like, I was reading an interview with Verhoeven, is like, you know, we're calling these bugs, like, we're using, like, you know, just referring to them as bugs, and but like as a type of slur. And I'm like, well, that's what you do when you're dehumanizing. That's a reason why you come up with the novel slurs for every ethnicity that you go to war, to make it easier to kill. It's like, but this, it's like, they're bugs. They're literally bugs. They're not human. The movie makes the point that they don't have any individual personality or wills. And I guess there was
but
some
they do.
There's like,
They absolutely do by the end. I mean, you see that, right? They have the brain bugs. They have intelligence. And throughout the movie, they're framing this as like, there's a guy who says, a bug that can think makes me sick. And it's yeah. like, to put that on a human being, because people did in the past, still do in some cases. And that's on the face of it, like ridiculous thing to say.
In the book, the bugs actually have a highly sophisticated culture. They have starships. They have lasers. They have
their own guns and shit.
And they even have their allied forces. They have these humanoid creatures called the Skinnies, who look like very thin, kind of stretched out humanoids that are in league with the bugs. And I just felt like the satire works so much better if there's anything about these bugs that make them seem like they're just not disposable. And like, I thought there'd be a third act reveal where it's like, actually these bugs are rich in some kind of natural resource, or their corpses make like some kind of cheap, efficient fuel or something, where someone's lining their pockets, that it's not, you know, like you're not in a war of survival against these faceless, brainless bugs. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like the books, I don't know, Heinlein takes a lot of shit for, you know, Starship Troopers being this like fascist tome, but like, I think it's a better maybe satire parody of pure fascism than the movie, just because it fleshes out the bugs and the creatures.
I haven't read it, so I can't really comment on that, but I don't know.
Because I'm like, I saw the
heavy satire in 97, and I view it as the same now, so.
If you take out the commercials, like the RoboCop type commercials, the actual plot, like RoboCop, the actual plot is telling a story about a North American city being completely sucked dry by corporations that are cynically pursuing their profit over their citizen safety, citizen's cup. Like if you take out
on Total Recall.
Yeah, if you take out the I'll buy that for a dollar and everything still works. But like, I feel like Starship Troopers, if you take out the cutaways to the bugs being stomped on the ground, which is not even that offensive to me, because again, they're just fucking bugs. And the bugs actually are trying to exterminate humanity.
It's not actually the stomping of bugs that makes that like offensive. It's the gleeful killing of any life form and the brainwashing, the like inbreeding of hatred into children. That's the thing that becomes offensive in those scenes. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, it's not as strong, I don't think, of a satire as something like a RoboCop or a Total Recall, things like that.
Yeah.
But I think it's more than just like hinted at. I think there's quite a bit in this. And like, I'm not comfortable saying, well, strip away all the, you know, propaganda commercials, because they're there. They're in the movie. They're of a piece. Like, yeah, you take out, you know, you take out the romance from Titanic, and suddenly it's just a tragedy, right? Like, sure, you can strip away any part of a movie and make it worse.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that, like, his other works, I think, do work as their satire, as originally written. It just, that just heightens it adds some humor to the thing, whereas this, it's like, if you take out this commercial, I just don't even think it works. Like, it's just an endorsement of fascism, because if you do fascist stuff, you get the perfect utopian society.
I mean, maybe it depends on what you think of expansionism and just the general idea that humanity has a right to rule the entire universe.
I don't necessarily
agree with that, but like,
this is where I
could see you getting there without being
fascist.
I don't know.
This is where I reveal myself as a closet fascist.
Maybe.
I do think humanity's birthright is the stars. And until we run into another intelligent species out there, everything that we can see, we can take and exploit.
Okay, there you go. I'm with you on this until we run into this intelligent species. But how do we respond to when we do run into an intelligent species? You know, is our response to immediately take everything they have and murder them all? Or is it going to be to try and figure out a way to coexist?
What do these bugs have?
Apparently they have planets that we want. I don't know.
Like they don't really tell that story. They filmed this thing on a place on this earth that's called Hell's Half Acre. So it's like, it's this inhospitable desert.
Yeah.
Like, again, why are we there? Like,
good question. Good damn question. Why are we there? Like, let's just leave the bugs alone, you know?
Because
do we need to encroach on their territory?
Like, I think it's a mistake for them to destroy Buenos Aires then, because to me, like, that's like, you know, you've got this thing where it's like there's tensions and there's borders being formed and there's skirmishes. And, you know, how do you do diplomacy with the fucking bugs anyway? And they fucking, from the beginning of the movie, they've been hurling asteroids at it. Hasn't been a big thing because we've been able to intercept them, stop them all. I think that it would have been better if there was a hint that, and I thought actually, oh, maybe this movie's way smarter than I remember it being. Because when Carmen suggests, like, the more efficient way to get their destination and they run across the asteroid, I thought there'd be a suggestion that, like, actually this asteroid was intended to get through our defenses by Earth so that we could, you know, ramp up the fascism and get everyone on board with exterminating them because that's what we want to do. Mm. But, like, there's nothing on the page that hints at. There's nothing on the page that suggests we're doing this for any other reason than we're in a fight for our survival against an implacable foe.
I mean, yeah, but you got to look at the roots of it. Like, how did that start? And it seems to have started because we are out there just picking fights, man. I don't know. I guess.
So that's the other thing is, I guess, like, I think satire is most effective if it's designed to shake the mind of a committed believer or maybe sway people who are, like, open to being swayed. And I feel like this movie only works if you're 100% on board with, like, wanting to see fascism as bad and being able to be parodied. And, like, I think it's, I said, I can just talk about my reaction as a young man. And it did make me, of course, I was pretty anti-fascist back then, but
Well, nobody got the satire of this movie. And I think that, like, speaks to kind of where you're coming from, is maybe it's too subtle, but, like, the reviews of this movie were like, Verhoeven's a Nazi.
Yeah, no.
That's what the Washington Post was saying.
That's
about
what people
these
said
two
about
guys.
Heinlein.
Verhoeven and Newman, or they're Nazis.
In 1959, what is this guy putting out this material for young boys? This is going to turn them all into Nazis. And then Verhoeven, yeah.
Well, and Verhoeven was out there saying explicitly, like, I made this as a satire. This is not supposed to be I made a fascist utopia and held it up to the light and said, look at all the problems with this too, but I guess he didn't show enough problems because people just literally thought it was, this guy's a Nazi and he's trying to propagandize our children.
Because that's the thing. It's like, here's the crux of our difference. Maybe we can get here or maybe we can just move on. What are the because you got things that you find distasteful, that, like, they're bullying bugs and they're taking over. But what is the problem? Like, the result of us doing that was a perfect society. And there's nothing I wish they'd come back to Earth and, like, Earth was looking more impoverished because all of our resources are going to this foreign war that's profiting some people. But, like, there's none of that. There's no negative impact.
Well, Buenos Aires is entirely wiped off the map. 12 million people dead. I mean, that's a negative impact.
Yeah, shit happens in war, but, like, it doesn't affect Earth. It doesn't affect, like, you know, like the end of the film is humanity victorious.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a good thing. It's
well, what's the bad, like, again, what is the bad things that are happening to humanity because of this? Because to me, I think fascism is just a self-destructive ideology. It cannot win. It can never be victorious, except for maybe in the short run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but like, this film is like, it's like if you told a Nazi film that ends in, like, the spring of 1941. Yeah, fucking Hitler and his dudes are up big and Germany think they got their chest puffed out and they're taking over the whole world. Well, tell it to 1945 when he's blowing his brains out in a bunker and the rest of them are swallowing cyanide. Like, they can't ever win because of the way it is. And this film doesn't tell.
Itself,
I don't even think Paul Verhoeven is a child who was traumatized by Nazis, but I don't think he understands, like, why fascism happens and how it works. It's just a bad thing to him. And, like, great.
I don't know, because you look at the end of this movie and you say they won, but, like, who won? Rico made it out. Carmen made it out. NPH made it out. A lot of people died along the way. A lot of people lost limbs along the way. Their lives aren't going to be better for this. They didn't win anything.
Well, I'll tell you what.
And if
there
this
won't
war,
be another. There won't be another goddamn Buenos Aires. That's for sure.
Yeah, Buenos Aires didn't win in this. Sure, we can rebuild, but those people didn't win. I don't know. I don't view it as a a total victory. Like, yes, it is all hurrah and like the humans are victorious against this, but I see it as like a ridiculous war in the first place, like a war that we started. And congratulations, we started a war and won it. Great. Is that how we want humanity to act? But I don't know, man. I saw this as a satire in 97. I see it as a satire today. I think it works well. I will say I don't think it works as well as something like RoboCop, which, yes, is more obviously satirical. But I still think it works. And there's a lot here to talk about other than just, you know, the satirical nature.
Oh, yeah,
like
I said, I'm ready to move. Yeah, like I'm ready to, like I've said.
Yeah,
we
can agree to disagree on like how good the satire is here. But clearly it was made as a satire, whether that was successful or not. Verhoeven is not a Nazi. Verhoeven actually despises that ethos.
And again, he
Verhoeven
has
was trying to make something anti-fascist here.
Yeah, this is a man who grew up in amidst the horrors of the Nazi Germany and his country recovering from the depredations of Nazi Germany. Yeah, like if you read anything about it, like this man is not a fascist, not a Nazi, and it's bad that got associated because of this, because he made a film that fucked up the satire so bad the contemporaneous everyone thought this guy's a fucking Nazi. He's got all his actors in Hugo
Post. To call you a Nazi.
Yeah.
Whew, that's rough, man. Washington Post has never called me a Nazi.
It's true.
I'll just say that.
You've never made fascism look this fucking cool. So.
This beautiful. This is gorgeous. Talk about the cast, man. The cast is crazy good looking in this. Even extras. Like, I've looked at the people like on the edges of the screen here. Even those people.
Yeah.
Are just like blindingly gorgeous.
They wanted to create a perfect society. Like, this is supposed to be a perfect society that, like, they just ruthlessly weeded out all the weak genes.
That's what I mean.
I guess,
like, think about
nothing but beautiful people left. Yeah.
Yeah. Think about the follow on from that, right? Okay. If all I'm seeing are beautiful people, where did the non beautiful people go?
Okay. Do you want to talk about, because we talked about special effects. Do we have anything left but just random observations to make about this movie?
I want to talk about my experience, another part of my experience with this movie, because it wasn't just like, oh, I think this movie is cool because it's sci-fi and it's satire and I don't like Nazis. This is also the movie that taught me that there is another person on this planet who looks just like Gary Busey. And it turned out that it was his son, Jake Busey. I did not realize there was another Busey, but I was so overjoyed to learn that the lineage of the Buseys would continue. Because, man, there's nothing like a Busey face, right?
Yeah.
It's just so unique. It's so enjoyable.
And it's literally like they made a Busey in the factory, and then it's been 30 years and they're like, you know what we haven't seen in a while? A fucking Busey. And they rolled another one right off the
Chevy
line.
Chevy Busey, yeah.
They actually found the original grills from those Busey models and bolted it right on the front. It's right there, front and center. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Chromed it all up.
Do you think Jake
man.
Will have a back half like his dad? Is he going to like slowly lose his mind and do reality television? And
I hope so.
And... Yeah.
It's the thing that I love about Gary Busey is not his work in like Lethal Weapon and shit. It's the second. It's I'm with Busey. It's the shit that he gets up to in his ranch out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You want that second stage ignition out of the Busey or, you know, it's like
and
have a Ford Pinto that doesn't catch on fire. You don't want that. It's part of the experience of being a Pinto owner, you know?
And we talked about all the beautiful people in this movie, and I don't know if Busey is beautiful, but he has a look and it's interesting and I enjoy looking at it.
It's
and
very
then you
blonde
pair him,
and blue-eyed, yeah.
You pair him with Clancy Brown, who has also a very similar look. Like, they almost could be... He could be Gary Busey to the Jake Busey, right?
100%.
Verhoeven has a taste for a particular type of person, apparently. A particular
You're right. The Clancy Brown and Busey, it's all about something about the skull shape and jaw.
They have very thin and tall faces.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they really amplify that with the haircut on Jake Busey. They really, like, pop that straight up. make him look like Inspector Gadget or some shit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one more observation about the actors. Is Casper Van Dien the West Chatham of the 90s?
Oh, man. That's Chatham's lander.
Okay.
You're going to let Amos hear you say that?
I think Wes might be the better actor.
Do we know that, though? Because
it's tough to
really say. Like Amos in The Expanse, and I like everything I've seen Wes Chatham in terms of podcasting and personal appearances and video clips and stuff.
He seems
like a swell guy. But Amos was like a no emotion having psychopath.
Yeah. He was not
all you had to be is
stretch
cool.
much.
And then he's literally in a role in that fucking Ahsoka where you never see his face.
Yeah.
And he's talking like,
and he has
you know,
three lines.
Vocoded Batman the whole time. So like, I don't know if he's good. So yeah, maybe, yeah. maybe.
I want to see more of Wes Chatham, but the look, I mean, the jawline, the haircut, I mean,
almost
the
like
eyes.
AI generated version of attractive masculinity.
Yes, for sure. The build is somewhat similar. I think
yeah,
Wes
like,
is a little stockier, but
I think it's telling that I've never seen an AI generated like ideal man, but like the internet's full like the every week they post an AI generated girl and it's like OnlyFans gals in shambles, like okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. But like they just like almost uncanny valley in how good looking they are.
Yes. It's weird. But yeah, this was back before I knew who Wes Chatham was, obviously. So I never made the comparison until this viewing. The other thing I found out about Casper Van Dien is in this movie, he beat out Mark Wahlberg and Matt Damon for this role, which I don't know if Matt and Mark weren't serious about getting the role or what, if it was just like, we got to have that Nazi look. And Matt Damon is not quite the Nazi boy we want.
I was going to say, Matt Damon's not Nazi poster boy enough for you. Like, you look at him in, like, Saving Private Ryan era, he kind of is. Like, you throw him in a Wehrmacht uniform, and he could probably recruit for the other side.
And I guarantee he could knock the acting out of the park. So,
yeah. And I think we were talking about this pre-podcast, but, like, that's a good question, because I'm like, well, if you had a better actor, would that have made this movie even worse? But then I thought, like, well, RoboCop, like Peter Weller being a pretty good actor, I think elevated that material. Like a guy who can act being a pretty unemotional kind of robotic, you know, I think having a better actor is going to better inhabit the interior of that character would probably give a better performance. But like, yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, a better actor would have been would have played really nicely against Dina Meyer. But Denise Richards was always like you'd have to do some other upgrades or boy, you'd really show her up. Damn.
Yeah, it's like putting a 400 horsepower engine in a Pinto. It's just
I beg you, watch Denise Richards pantomime flying in this movie. And I wish there's a way to turn off the special effects in a green screen so you can just see her in a cockpit in the green screen. Uh-huh. And it's almost like a little kid riding one of those merry-go-rounds with the cars going. She's like getting up in the seat and like drive. It's like she's as convincing a pilot as she is a nuclear engineer. And the world is not enough.
Yeah. I'm with you. She's not very good.
I will say
something I like about Verhoeven's stuff is its kind of cheesy nature. You know, the effects that aren't quite there, right? Like a stop motion robot and shit. Like, it might be how a robot moves, but probably not. The physical effects done for blowing up Arnold Schwarzenegger's face on Mars, like that stuff doesn't look realistic, but it's very cool. It's very stylized. And I think if you go too far in the direction of like the serious tone and really good acting and just solid all around everything, I think Verhoeven loses his Verhoeven-ness. The thing I appreciate about him is a little bit of camp.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're right. Still might be a better idea to have a solid leading man, though. But I, you're right.
Well, I mean, look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, right?
True.
He's a decent actor, but you know, the accent gets in the way, and he's not the world's greatest actor. He's not Matt Damon, but
no. You know, another connection The Expanse has with this movie, other than your imagined one with Wes Chatham, it's actually a real connection. Here's one solid connection. Mormons in space.
Okay. Yes.
I love the random like cutaway to Mormon extremists ignored the Federation and settled on this bug planet, and now Fort Joe Smith. Look at him. Yep. Look at him butchered. Like what,
Joe? So, I like how they call him Joe.
Yeah, Port Joe Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Mormons in space.
Wow, I didn't think about that. You're right.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it.
How correct or how close do you think they got to our current future with the video and computer technology? Because the one thing that they tried to do with FedNet was sort of hypothesize where are TV and computers going in the future? And that's the FedNet stuff is in those propaganda commercials. It's like, want to know more? Find out now or whatever. And it's designed to be like an interface where you can kind of tap to navigate around through different video clips, I guess.
Yeah, it does feel like early kind of hypertext protocol type things, right? But it also is exactly how ads work on the internet today. Like they show you this thing and then do you want to learn more? Pops up in the middle and you can click it or
pretty much
dismiss it for your other content. So it
it has like a YouTube vibe to it as well, right? Like you pop up a card up in the corner and you can click on that to go to another video. It's related. It feels a little bit like that.
Yeah. What? So I feel like I'm a lot higher on the special effects than you are in this movie. You mentioned that some of it. I'm like, what are the weak areas of special effects?
It's mostly about fidelity. There's like a blur kind of thing going on, and maybe it makes the bugs look better when they're CG, but there's a little bit of a blur. It's not as high resolution as the rest of the film.
Huh.
And that stands out a little to me in this. I will say I'm not like low on the effects. I think the effects are really good for what they are.
When I look at like how I can, and this is a controversial opinion, but I think the big grand dinosaur reveal scene in Jurassic Park is starting to show its age. Because it's these early CGI dinosaurs in bright light.
You're talking about the long necks, the Vegasaurus.
No, not that scene. The one where he grabs Laura Dern's head, turns it, and she draws, and it's da 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 da. It's the Serengeti, kind of like at the water, everyone at the watering hole. I think that scene is the only, almost the only thing in that movie that is showing its age.
Yeah, I agree.
But like I compare that to like the bright desert lit bugs in this movie, and they just hold up a hell of a lot better, I think. And it might be because they're moving faster and there's a ton of them, and there's kind of like, you know, you have hundreds and thousands of them at the screen at the time, and they're always kicking up a cloud of dust, which they might have done that to hide the resolution. But I thought that the CG for those and the way that they blended the actors like being thrown in the air, you know, like I was thinking, like, how did they do some of these shots where they had to get an actor in a rig because they're getting ran through by things and then a creature's throwing them in the air and stuff. And it just looks really solid.
So I know there was some extremely tight storyboarding in the pre-production process that helped them later in the post-production with the effects, because they knew exactly where to hit their marks. But also, this movie was not cheap. This is a very expensive movie by the terms of the day. $90 million in 1997 is about half of like the most expensive movie ever made.
Yeah.
And most of that money was spent on budget. I mean, they don't have Matt Damon in here soaking up $12 million, right? Yeah. So this movie did have actually really stellar effects for the time, and I think it still shows. There are a lot of movies in 97 that look a lot worse than this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I did think that, like, you can start to see But now, because like I think the little small shuttles, like the drop shuttles and stuff, are kind of shit. But then when I was reading production, that they wanted to have like Warhammer style drop pods, where like the mobile infantry comes screaming in on these pods that slam to the ground, and the doors open, they come pouring out, and they also, if you've read the novel, you just alluded to it, that all these guys are wearing like full power suits that have like rocket pods and like nuclear grenade launchers, and a part of their combat is like kangaroo jacking around, just like they do these big like Incredible Hulk style bounds as they get traverse in combat, and there's none of that. They're just, you know, and I guess that's the other thing that really let me down, is like, yeah, I knew going in, because I followed the production, there wasn't going to be power armor, but just the brain dead military tactics. Like, this is shit right out of the late 70s, early 80s, where the mobile infantry would literally get shoulder to shoulder with their machine guns at their navel. Until there was no any kind of maneuver. There was no like the one kind of cool moment is where Casper Van Dien gets his Legolas on, and he gets on the back of that big stink bug and blows a hole in its carapace and slams a grenade in. And
yeah,
that pays off the American Gladiator bullshit they were doing in the beginning of the movie. I kind of thought that there might be some actually cool maneuvers and tactics, but it's very B movie, giant bugs, the destroy. And I think that stuff also was gross. That stuff still, like, when they're people are getting torn apart.
Oh yeah.
It's pretty bad. I still find it very hard to watch the brain bug at the end when he stabs that dude's skull and starts sucking his brains out. I think fucking gross.
I love it. And the way his head just sort of kind of shrivels up a little bit.
Like it's a Capri Sun.
Oh man, it's so good.
And you're sucking the last of the tropical punch out of it. His cheeks are hollowing. Yep. And I also try to find the exact moment it stops becoming a homeless man's Rob Lowe and becomes like a prosthetic.
Yeah. Yep. It's surprisingly late into that transformation, I think. I love that. Those borderline cheesy effects, right? The thing level stuff where it's like, clearly this is not CG and it doesn't look realistic, but it looks damn cool.
Yeah. I also thought it's interesting that this movie comes so early in the internet's existence, because it did exist. Like, you know, even hypertext, email, all that stuff existed by 97. It wasn't quite wide, like widespread adoption, but it was getting there. But they're still like, when they get their when they get their stack of mail from the family, it's like mini CDs. The idea that you can just beam information way faster. Like, nah, they're just still using physical media. I always think that's really funny.
Yeah. Good stuff. Because 97 was the heyday of CDs for sure. It was like just on the cusp of DVDs being a real thing. But video CDs would have been out there.
There's this thing that I've never noticed before, but the scene where Rico meets up with Carmen for the first time since she's broken up with him, and he's, I think, just lost somebody, and she's a high-flying pilot, and she's got her boyfriend there with her, and they're playing some... I think you're supposed to understand the bar they're at is playing Mazzy Star's Fade Into You.
Okay. I'm not but super then, familiar with that song.
Really? But then it it's like in the background, but then when they start fighting, Verhoeven actually increases the sound, and it's kind of the soundtrack of the fight. This like very romantic, sensual, you know,
is this part of the
song.
Satire?
I think
like
so.
A love
I think
letter
it's
to violence.
I think it's him being funny for sure.
Okay, I noticed that, and I was like, I need to look up that song, and I forgot to, but all right, so that was a weird moment in the movie.
I feel like there's two movies I watched that made it around the same time that made a big impact. I think it's like my simping inoculation. This movie that, like, I think does a really good job of doing both sides of the friend zone, you know, because Carmen friend zones the shit out of Rico, and then Rico friend zones the shit out of Dizzy.
Yeah, pays it forward.
And then the other one is Snow Falling on Cedars. Like, the whole, like, man, you really don't want to live your life to make a woman happy. Because that doesn't you lose your arm, you lose something every single time. But yeah, I remember watching that thinking yeah. like so clearly, like, this guy is being a dumbass. What the hell? Why is he signing for the military to be with this woman that clearly is like, you're my high school boyfriend. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I'm with you. I immediately latched onto that. I was like, this is a terrible idea. And then when Rico supposedly dies, right, he's pronounced KIA.
Yeah.
And Carmen learns of that. What does she feel? Because does she know that Rico followed her into the military and the only reason he signed up is to try and be with her? And then, hilariously, they're immediately split up into, you know, millions of miles away.
I think so. Did you know that they actually shot a whole scene of her finding out that he's dead and then poor man's Rob Lowe moving in on him and then them having like a sex scene? And the early audience reviews were just like, when people saw that, like, the second that she heard that Johnny's dead, that she jumps in bed, that she does a full Lori from
I almost
the
thought it was
dead.
Too much with what made it to the screen.
That's what I'm saying. Like, people hated her.
For
hated
sure.
her. So, like, Verhoeven kind of, like, really toned that back to where they barely kind of have... You almost feel like poor man's Rob Lowe is kind of in the Van Dien zone. He's getting friend zoned by Carmen because all she does is love flying 500,000 tons of steel. That's the only thing she's capable of loving.
Yeah. Huh. How does their relationship end up in this movie? Because I know he dies. He gets his brain sucked out.
Brain
but where
sucked
were
out.
They when that happened? Emotionally.
They were abandoning ship.
No,
that's
no,
thing,
no.
Like
romantically. They were abandoning ship romantically?
That's the thing, it's very ambiguous because it feels like once you cut out the scene where they kind of, you know, what do you call that when you seal the deal, when you consummate the relationship, it just feels like, that she is, it's another guy that she's kind of keeping at arm's length because she's not quite that into him.
Which is fine. I mean, she could do that if what she really wants to do is fly. That's great. But like,
Yeah,
it felt simultaneously like there wasn't enough there romantically between them, and also like it was too quick, even with what made it to the screen.
And there's just so much stupid, like the fact I couldn't believe when like Dizzy said, do a flip six. He's like, what? We'll score just like we did back in high school. It's like, it's
three
literally,
hole.
I'll try a barrel roll. That's a cool trick. Like,
it's working.
Flip six is it's not like a complicated thing. Or like this person's going to go and block, and then this person's going to do this, and then you're going to have a feint up the middle, and you're going to. It's just okay. Go out there, run as fast as you can, do a forward flip, and you'll get it. You'll get into the end zone.
What,
like,
is
well,
the
how does
six?
This
trick? What is the six part, and what is the three hole? That's what I want to know.
The
three hole is clearly innuendo, but the six part?
Yeah. There's a lot of funny innuendo. I believe that's referring to gaps in like a line, and the six is the touchdown, apparently. Yeah, where Carmen's getting a reputation for being a girl that's pretty wild with the stick. I mean.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's quite a bit of triple entendres here.
Speaking of being wild with the stick, I was shocked because I didn't know who she was at the time to see that Amy Smart is in this movie as like the co-pilot.
Oh my God, you're right. She's not even, I don't think, called out on is she uncredited in that role?
She's on IMDb for sure, but you have to dig. She's like way at the bottom.
Right.
In the credits, she's like
she
down
like
there
she's
with the assistant production
old,
agent or something. Like
she is so like... Fresh
she
off
looks
the
almost
line.
Sillier in the uniform than Denise Richards does because she has such a baby face in this. But
yeah
Amy Smart. I don't know. Love her. I think she's great.
Really like how they did and this is some of the satire that's, I think, working is, you know, Carl, the Doogie Howser guy, Neil Patrick Harris, is just like the class clown. He's like the goofball, not taking anything too serious. And then he gets drafted into military intelligence. The next time you see him, he's wearing like an SS officer's trench coat, dark circles under his eyes and a 1,000-yard stare from all. It's very Ender's Game, like him having to order thousands of people into the death to try to lure this brain bug out. And I thought that was good, that they really gave him a haunted quality when he comes back, that he has been molded into a weapon by the society.
And NPH can pull that off. Like, he's so good.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. And now, back with more Bald Move. I also really like that they paid off the importance of a knife, you know, with, because Clancy Brown's got the whole thing. It's like, whoa, if you can just push a button and nuke him, why would you? And he pins Gary Busey's kid's hand to the wall to be like, oh, try to push a button now. And then at the end, Carmen's last stand of defiance against a brain bug is to whip out her knife and slice its proboscis off. I thought that was like, oh, yeah, that's like they actually paid that off. It's pretty cool.
And apparently get just sprayed with fake Rob Lowe's brains.
Yeah.
Patrick Muldoon.
Maybe someone will rub off and she'll have 2.5 brain cells.
Is that part of the satire? Speaking of the Jake Busey getting his hand pinned to the wall. The other guy, like Clancy Brown, just shatters some kid's arm and invites the fight. Like says, who thinks they can take me out? Like this is him measuring his dick in front of a bunch of kids, right? Like I'm just going to show you how tough I am.
He's excited when the biggest, dumbest guy stands up, like, I reckon I can, boss. And you can, like, Clancy, but he lights up, like, oh, yeah.
And
I got
to
volunteer.
He brutalizes him. And then he throws a knife through Clancy Brown's hand for thinking, like, that he's tough. Clancy Brown throws a knife through Busey's hand. This is ridiculous. This is over the top.
Yeah. and I, the it's afraid of Doogie Howser. I always think that's really funny. That like when he steps up to it, it kind of recoils. You know, like it truly is afraid of this little skinny blonde kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's with the psychic stuff in this movie? Speaking of,
it's not in the book.
Really? I assumed it was. Wow.
No, I don't know.
That's an interesting thing to add. Is it just a way to show that these creatures are intelligent? Like, you can have a human being saying, yes, they are intelligent. They feel things. They know things. They can think.
And give a plausible, like, win condition. Like, here is a single thing you can capture. We can study.
Now we have intelligence.
Make it work. And now we can.
Oh, my God. But the way they're studying it. I mean, if this isn't satire, I don't know what is. Like, they're taking effectively chainsaws and shoving them up the buttholes of these bugs. It's like,
right, it's just torture, medical torture.
Yeah, it doesn't tell you anything.
Honestly, if you look at the Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany, that's kind of their medical, like, it was just doctors fucking
right.
around, man.
There right.
Was, that's the sad thing is, like, there's almost, like, of all the fucking misery and death that they did, the trial, this crazy shit, like, so much of it is just useless medically and scientifically because they were sadists. They weren't really doing science. They didn't write anything down. They didn't do any kind of controls. Like, it was just them being fucking evil doctors. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like that makes it to the screen here, that bit of satire.
Yeah. But it, again, it's a fucking murderous bug, so. Trying to think what else is there that I want to talk about in this movie.
Well, a little more on the satire stuff. I think there's a perfect tonal shift in the middle of this movie where you've gone from, you've got all these kids who have joined up with this hoorah attitude, wanting to, you know, earn their keep in society. And they don't quite understand what that means. Certainly some of them do a little bit more than others, but Casper Van Dien doesn't understand what that means at all. He's mm-hmm. doing it to chase a girl. He's doing it to find himself, figure out his life.
Yeah.
And there is a tonal shift from these propaganda commercials being made and these kids kind of training and having fun and a good old time together. And then you smash cut to them landing on this planet and just getting eviscerated
yeah.
by these bugs, just left and right. 100,000 soldiers dead in under an hour. That tonal shift right there, I think, is like part of the commentary, right? Like, you have an idea of what it's like, but once you get into this meat grinder, you begin to understand something entirely different.
Yeah, there's like two pivots. That's the first one, and the second one is like Buenos Aires getting destroyed. But yeah, I think that worked really well. Yeah, by him not knowing what he's doing, what he's getting into. I think it's funny that his other option is you can join mobile infantry because he's that dumb. Like, if he's smart, mm-hmm. he would be put in the pilot thing.
Oh,
or
no.
That. But his dad's plan is to send this kid to Harvard.
Yeah.
In 700 years, has Harvard become like a third-tier community college, or is his dad that big of a swinging dick that he can get him into Harvard even though he's clearly the dumbest man?
It's got to be the latter, right? I mean, this guy's no dummy. He's clearly made a bunch of money somehow.
Yeah.
His dad has, because look at their house.
But they're not citizens. That's the other thing I think the satire fails
civilians.
Is they're civilians, and they look like they have dope lives. They're just like mm-hmm. happily living within this. They're just freeloading within this fascist society, and that wouldn't. I mean, they'd be one of the first up against the wall. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
But they're just allowed to shit on the government and shit on service and do all this and be like, oh, no, our kids are going to, you're not going to go into the military. You're going to go into Harvard. And I don't know. I thought that was, but yeah, the fact that Casper Van Dien is going to go to Harvard, I don't buy it.
And Seth Gilliam is too, right? Watkins.
He's got a guy with a flash of intelligence. I buy Seth Gilliam going to Harvard. Yeah.
And he's excited about it. And I think, like you said, he's intelligent. So I think he would recognize if he's going to a bad college. So Harvard must be great. And Rico's dad must have a lot of pull. That's got to be the case.
To get a civilian that dumb into Harvard?
With a 37 in math or with 35 in math? Boy, there's a lot of other stuff to talk about. I don't think that you should have to break glass with your fist on any part of a spaceship in order to make it function. Did
especially
you see this?
To like what to like get full power to your boosters? That's like in case of glass break, so you can put the pedal to the metal.
You do know that they have flip cover switches, right?
Sure. If you
that
wanted
perform
to do
the same function without bloodying your entire hand.
Yeah, yeah, that's a dumb scene. And again, like, she does this whole scene as if she is looking for change in the ashtray so she can pay to put a couple quarters into the vacuum at the laundromat car, the car-o-mat, the car wash, the A1 car wash. Like, there's not, like, yeah, there is. Yeah, man, she's so bad.
Yeah, no,
poor
I'm
Denise Richards.
There.
someone
great
said,
to look at, not great.
You
to
got
watch
a great
act.
Look, gal. You should be in motion pictures, and somehow it happened.
Yeah,
never should have been put in that position. Should have just
Kevin
done
Bacon.
Modeling. There was. She just should have been in the pages of L. That's it.
Yeah, I agree. The Diz's funeral, Dizzy's funeral. It's supposed to be, you know, this beautiful eulogy to a person that he cared about, and a person that was important to their squad. And I just kept thinking, 100,000 dead in under an hour. Are all of these kids getting this funeral? And if so, they're probably still having funerals for those 100,000 dead by the time that Diz dies. Why is she so special? Do they have space coffins, space caskets for every single one of them? Get fired out? Or is it just because she is loved by Rico and he's like, I don't even think he's that high up at that point. He's like, maybe he's lieutenant.
Did he take over? I was trying to think of when. No. Yeah, you're right. Because Ironside made him lieutenant in that scene where she dies.
I think so.
Because he gets torn in half. Yeah.
So he might have the pull to get her a fancy funeral, whereas everybody else just gets their dog tags mailed home. I don't know.
It's weird because, like, also, like, lieutenant is like the leader of a platoon, which is a very small, like, what's that, between 20 and 40 dudes. So,
yeah, it's not like he's a general.
I feel like he's more like a captain or a major in the way they treat him and how many men are under his supervision. But whatever, man. Paul Verhoeven doesn't give a shit about any of that stuff.
Yeah, apparently. Also, when Diz dies, man, don't pull that shard of bug out of her, because that, I think, might be the only thing keeping her alive. The wounds in this movie are egregious, right? Like, these are very dangerous creatures.
Yes.
They are sharp in all the places, and they're very strong and very fast. And so many people get punctured by these things in brutal ways through their entire abdomen. Just get this massive hunk of bug replacing where your heart and lungs and stomach used to be. And Diz gets that treatment, and Rico's response is to run over and pull that out of her.
Yeah.
And then watch her die, of course, because she's just going to bleed out everywhere. There's no medics around. The other wild thing is when Denise Richards gets captured by the bugs, she gets this massive hole in her shoulder. It's like shot with a shotgun. Through her left shoulder, and by the time she has cut off the proboscis or whatever and escaped that whole situation with Rico, she's walking around like she doesn't have a care in the world. She's laughing and joking with NPH as she must be actively bleeding out. I don't know if she's gotten loopy because of the blood loss or what, but she does not treat this wound with any respect.
It's funny because you mentioned these wounds. Like, I noticed in this movie, they have like this back to tank scene where there's this like mechanical thing that's like 3D printing his leg back together. And I thought it's like, is that the first time I saw something like that? And then I'm like, oh no, they're in the fifth element.
Yep.
1997 has a similar like medical machine where it's like when it's putting Lilu back together from like her hand.
Is that 97? I thought that was like 95.
No, it's 97. They both came out in the same year. Wow. Was there like some article in Popular Mechanics that's like the future of surgery is going to be 3D printing your bone? Because like it's almost the exact same machine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something in the zeitgeist. Little nano machines stitching it together, building you up from the blocks.
I mean, that's the dream, right? The practically any wound can just be fully repaired. No sign of damage. And I do wonder, like, if they have that technology, why do they also have people manning the recruiting desk who don't have any legs or arms, right?
Well, I mean, that's low-key when I saw that happening. I wondered the same thing. And also, like, they'd probably just let this guy die because they got, like, tons of recruits streaming in, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's telling that he doesn't have enough benefits to actually get new legs. I mean, you see a couple people with replacement limbs, but for the most part, it's people who have lost stuff for good and nobody's even trying to repair them.
Yeah. Like the guy who's at the recruiting desk doesn't even have prosthetic legs. He's just got, because he doesn't need it. He's a prosthetic arm because he's punching things and stuff, but he's just sitting all day. What's he need legs for?
Right.
More fascist satire.
Yep. The other thing I love about Carmen in this movie is she's this ace pilot, like this. Well, she's wild on the stick. Yeah. She's willing to go where other people aren't. She can handle any maneuver, right? She's even hardened veterans are shocked by the ball she has in flying and the skill she has. And when they are crash landing in this pod, this escape ship, after the Roger Young has been destroyed, and they're going down on the planet, and fake Rob Lowe is like, I don't know, that's a tough landing. Can you make it? She's like, piece of cake. I got this. And what happens is she crashes into the top of a mountain, skips off of it, and then smack face into another mountain. And they're only alive because that mountain is hollow.
Yeah.
If that mountain were an actual mountain, they would both be smithereens, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's the only way you could get through that bug flak.
Piece of cake. I got this. Bam, right into a mountain.
You got to destroy the minivan to save the minivan.
Mm-hmm. It also has a moment that is one of my favorite moments of the 90s is when in Chain Reaction, Keanu Reeves, seeing that this cold fusion plant or whatever is about to explode, decides to hop on a moped and run away from the explosion.
This is one of our oldest inside jokes. Like,
yes.
We reference this shit all the fucking time as kids, and still to this day, you just heard him do it in 2024.
And he does it. He lives. He does. He survives on a moped.
He outruns a nuclear explosion on a Vespa or some shit.
They do the same thing here, except maybe worse. They outrun it on foot. Like, that explosion that Seth Gilliam creates with a nuke
in a confined tunnel with one person hobbling between, they hobble their way. And the funny thing is like, they don't even like the, you can see the flames behind them. Like, the shockwave's there.
Yeah.
And they look at it and they're like, oh, hobble slightly faster. And there's like several seconds of the flames right at their back. And then, like, I think Verhoeven's like, well, there's no way people believe that they get to the end of the tunnel, jump out, and have the flame go over them. So, you know what? Yeah. We'll have the roof cave in, and that will just stop it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
it's pretty
not
wild.
Convincing. It's not convincing.
No.
I still can't believe he jerseyed her right before. Like, that's his opening move. Like, they're about to get down, and he pulls the opening round of a hockey fight. Just pulls her shirt over her head, works her midsection a bit, headbutts her. Then he's got her right where he wants her. She's helpless.
He works the face quite a bit. They should have had him be a hockey player, right? I mean, if this movie was made by Canadians, he would have been a hockey player, and it would have made more sense when he jerseys her.
Wait, he's Canadian?
If this movie were made by Canadians.
Yeah, no, it would have been a Happy Gilmore play for sure.
Yeah. That makes more sense. Like, what's he going to do? You don't get jerseyed in football.
Especially this, they're like wearing, like I said, it's all American Gladiators. Wearing these skin-tight outfits with these doopy little helmets, are those helmets literally like the MI helmets with the ears cut off? Did they save some? I need to go back and watch the
movie
might
to be.
See. Because I'm thinking, I'm like, those are like, MI helmets without the side pieces on them, aren't they?
Could be. I think that's about all I've got. Like I said, I love this movie. I still think it's great, both as a satire, which I guess you could argue over, but also just as a point in Verhoeven's career where he was about to stop really doing the campy stuff that I love. You know, he was making The Showgirls a few years earlier, trying to get a little more serious, whatever that means in Verhoeven's catalog. And I know he did Basic Instinct and stuff like that, but I appreciate this flavor of Verhoeven quite a bit.
Yeah, it's one of the last looks we get at it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't think this is a bad film. I just wish it did the things it was trying to do a little bit better and or gave me some mobile infantry power suit bolter porn, you know.
Gotcha,
Something, because I just like this film is just not executing at a high enough level. It'd be like if you had RoboCop, but the RoboCop suit was dumb. It's like that. If Weller looks ridiculous as RoboCop, that movie just doesn't work. And I felt like you either needed to make the fascism, like the contrast between the publicity of the fascism, the propaganda, and the actual real life on Earth would have been interesting. Or ditch that shit and just try to like satirize what I think Heinlein was actually trying to get at. Because I don't think Heinlein was a Nazi either. You know, maybe you could argue he's like a libertarian or he's like an objectivist Ayn Rand type, but like that's not the same thing. And I think it would have been or just don't call it Starship Troopers, call it Outpost 7, and then you can, you know, have your super.
Well,
fun.
That movie doesn't get made, Aaron, because it's not going to make enough money.
Instead, they slapped Heinlein's name and pissed all the Heinlein fans off. So,
and it still didn't make enough money.
But it has come around to being like, I mean, in 2024, I think everyone appreciates the satire of it because the way that if he had had the and they do this in Helldivers, which is a video game that owes at least 50% of its existence to this movie. They did. That's the whole thing. The reason the humans are invading the bugs is because the bugs' body are just naturally rich in petrochemicals. Gotcha. Their blood is essentially sweet crude. Uh-huh. So, and you're always like, you know, when you're going to their nest, you're blowing them up and you're putting oil pumps in. And like, if they just had something being the point that all these people are dying for some sin, like we're saying it's for survival, but it's actually just a cynical way to make money and to line the pockets of the powerful and the elite, but they don't. It's literally it's a fascist paradise and it just kind of works. I think it was a missed opportunity, but again, maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe I'm too much of a Heinlein fan. Maybe I was too conservative when I saw this movie. I just like, it's always been a disappointment. And when I watched it today, I was like, oh, yeah. Cause we had seen this, I think 5 years ago as one of our Sci-Fi Sunday, but.
Oh, did we?
Sci-Fi.
Yeah. We live watched it. Uh-huh.
We live watched it. And when we're doing that, it's like, oh, every other minute I'm not paying attention to because chat's doing something or we're talking or whatever.
Right.
And so I was kind of excited to be like, I can't wait to watch this as a 47-year-old that's come a long way and I'm going to see all the things that people, and it just didn't happen. So anyway, that's Starship Troopers. Mm-hmm. What is our next one, Jim? What's the next subject of our Pulp podcast, and what can people vote on if they're executive producers at Club Bald Move right now?
Looks like The Mummy, which big surprise there, huh?
Oh my god, it's going to be a crowd pleaser.
Yeah,
I just watched that recently. I know it holds up. That's going to be a lot of fun.
The Mummy's excellent. Don't watch Scorpion King, but definitely watch The Mummy.
I don't know if any of the sequels of The Mummy hold up. But I do know The Mummy does. Brendan Fraser. Hmm. Who's the gal in that?
Is it Rachel Weisz?
It is, yeah. She was also an Enemy at the Gates. I'm excited for that one. What can people vote on right now if they go to support.baldmove.com, become an executive producer in the club?
Well, you got a choice of three movies. If you're an executive producer over on Patreon, you can choose Dread. That's the remake of Judge Dredd, right, from 2012.
Carl Urban.
Yeah, that's a fun
Cersei
movie.
Cersei Lannister.
Yep. You could choose Gravity, which I think everybody remembers that.
That's the Cuaron, space disaster film.
Isn't that Cuaron? Starring Sandra Bullock, which is just an hour and a half of harrowing shit over and over.
One damn thing after another.
Mm-hmm. Or you could choose John Carter, which I don't really know anything about. What is John Carter?
I don't know. I've never seen it, but I keep hearing that like this is a lightly regarded science fiction film, that big budget Disney science fiction film that flopped. It's based on, I think, an Edgar Rice Burroughs, the guy who wrote Tarzan. He wrote a whole other story about a series of stories about a man who goes to Mars, and Mars is seen as like this kind of like, you know, like 19th century version of Mars, where it's a lush jungle planet with like kingdoms and this and that. And it's got like great special effects and great story and great acting. And no one went to see it because it was called John Carter.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know. It's been on my list of things to watch. So if I can get paid to watch it, so much the better.
Mm-hmm.
Probably will lose. I can't imagine anyone choosing that, taking a winger on that when you got Dread. Or what was the other one?
And Gravity.
Gravity right there. Oscar winners and top 10 movies of the year. But John Carter's there. So there you go. If you want to take the challenge, hit up support.baldmove.com. where you can help us decide what movies to watch, get ad-free feeds, tons of other bonus content. support.baldmove.com. Thank you for listening to us talk about Starship Troopers. We'll see you on the next one. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.